Hi, this is John from Tale of the Manticore, and you're listening to Stories from the First Watch.
Welcome to Stories from the First Watch. This is both a solo game and an experiment in storytelling. The story and the character's actions will unfold upon the roll of the dice. Once the game starts, nothing is predetermined. The dice are in control. Four weeks ago, Elmander muttered curse words darkly to himself as he encouraged his mount up the narrow, winding mountain path. It was a pitch-black night up in the Grimcrag Heights, 2 days' ride north of Jankeen, and the lack of visibility was exacerbated by an oppressive fog that had clung stubbornly to the mountainsides. The beast, though, was confident and sure-footed, and Elmander appreciatively patted its neck as it negotiated a particularly tricky stretch of path that overhung the ravine stretching down below and disappearing into the misty depths. It had taken a while to get to this point. Although the two had been travelling north for 2 days, they had been together for three times as long. Elmander had spent time visiting the stallion, bringing it small treats of food and letting it gradually get accustomed to his presence. Lord Flay's stable was notorious for selecting the most haughty and bad-tempered steeds for his mounts, ensuring they were loyal only to him, so Elmander had ensured he had put the work in to gain the horse's trust. Then, when the time finally came to take Darkmane, he did it in the dead of night. Abeline had made sure that he was on watch duty, and thus allowed him to pass the gate without comment. Instead of the direct route north, Elmander had led Darkmane on a meandering route, meaning his scent had spread over much of the surrounding region. Finally, after he was sure he was not being tracked, he changed direction and guided the horse northwards. Elmander looked up, as in the distance a faint peal of thunder rang around the valleys. He sighed irritably. The hill dwellers around these parts, whom he considered parochial and simple, believed that storms were the results of mountain giants battling each other on the peaks. He didn't believe in such nonsense, but he did know from experience that springtime up in these forbidding heights could brew up many of these tempests, making the narrow, winding pathways much more difficult and dangerous. Well then, time to get north out onto the plains, and to civilization as soon as possible. He murmured some words of encouragement into Darkmane's ear, and the two of them traversed ever deeper into the Grimcrags. All that kept Elmander going was the thought of the reward that would surely, surely be waiting for him at the end of this journey. Day 7, early morning. Party status. Killia, 6 of 7 hit points. Elmander, 13 of 14 hit points. Narvi, 7 of 12 hit points. Mara, 8 of 8 hit points. Macus, 8 of 8 hit points. Spells available: Shield and Read Magic. The party were led down some dark, winding tunnels, thin enough that they and the bandits escorting them could only walk 2 abreast. Each party member was also separated from their friend by a bandit, in front and behind, so they could not make any attempts at communication. The passages wound not only side to side, but also up and down, so that after a short while the party members were completely disoriented, not knowing whether they would travel upwards or downwards. The walls became roughly hewn again, and covered in very non-dwarven graffiti, caricatures of grim skulls, skeletal hands, and other memento mori. Narvi's face was a picture of utter disgust.
My god will not tolerate this utter blasphemy. It is fitting you vermin worship death, because you will all be in his arms much sooner than you expect.
Bargeld halted the troop and turned to the dwarf. He spat at the latter's feet and laughed harshly.
You cannot even stop me doing that. Why should we be afraid of your petty threats, shortling? You've seen what we can do to your kinsfolk. You'll join their fate right enough if you're very lucky.
Narvi, livid, struggled hard against his captors, but their chains held him, and he glowered as Bargeld turned his back again, mocking laughter trailing behind him. A short time later, the party were led out of the tunnels into a larger, circular chamber. Narvi's eyes widened with shock as he took in the decor. A granite throne sat on a high dais in the centre of the room. The dais and much of the floor around it was scattered with a vast carpet of bones. Skulls, large thigh bones, ribs, teeth, humanoid, animal, and other older creatures. The troop halted.
No,
said Lucan.
You, my friend,
he pointed at Almanda,
will come with me. It is time we had a civil conversation.
As Almanda made to retort, Lucan flicked his wrist, and the man's mouth froze in mid-speech.
You mistake me. I only wish you to respond when I ask you to.
The necromancer smirked. He turned to the remainder of the party.
The rest of you, you will be my guests for the time being, until I decide what should be done with you.
He turned, then, strangely, seemed to catch himself. His eyes rolled up into his skull, and he jerked his head as if trying to listen to something. After a few seconds, he spoke softly, replying to some unseen other.
I understand, my love.
Then, regaining his former poise, he grinned at Bargeld.
Make them comfortable. Show them our wonderful hospitality.
The other party members were bundled down another tunnel, their shouts and cries disappearing into the echoing passageways. Behind the scenes. This episode is a special one for Killia, as she is about to progress to level 3, and, given the party's current circumstances, they are going to need all the help they can get. Firstly, as a third level rogue, Killia's thieving abilities will again increase as follows. Opening locks to a 35% chance of success. Removing traps, 30%. Pickpockets, 40%. Move silently, 35%. Climbing walls to 82%, hide to 20%, and listen to 38%. This all reflects the increase in Killia's prowess as she's gained experience. Now, does she develop any of her 6 basic attributes? Rolling a d6 for each. On a roll of a 6, the attribute will go up by 1 point. Strength, 5, no change here. Dexterity, 2. Again, this stays the same. Constitution, 2. No change. Intelligence, a 6. This is the second time that Killia's intelligence has increased. She goes up to 13, which gives her a +1 bonus on intelligence checks. Pretty good. Wisdom, another 2. Charisma, just a 3. No change here either. Now, do her saving throws increase when she hits level 3? Let's check the basic fantasy roleplay rules. No, these all stay the same for another level. Finally, let's see how much her hit points have increased by. In basic fantasy rules, thieves' hit points increase incrementally by d4, so let's roll. 3. That brings Killia's maximum hit points to 10. Although currently, after the previous combats and just a couple of hours of broken sleep, she remains on 6. All in all, a pretty decent level up. Let's hope this helps the party. Now, let's return the focus to the party's fighter. Due to his prior links with the cohort of Paha, Elmander has been separated from the rest of the party and taken before Lucan for questioning. Given his antipathy towards his former associates, I'm going to assume that Elmander will not give up any information lightly. In that case, Lucan will expect that response, so he is going to order his minions to apply some pressure. They will place a burning torch under Elmander's bare feet to see if he cracks. There is a general distaste for torture amongst the more civilized regions of the provinces, but as we have seen, Lucan is not someone to follow societal conventions, and a death cult will not balk at inflicting pain on a living thing. I'm going to roll 3 constitution checks for Elmander, representing the endurance of pain in units of time, measuring 5 minutes each. Each time he passes, the next one will be rolled at a -1 penalty, until he either gives up or holds out. I will roll the first test of fire, a straight constitution check. 17. Elmander passes. The fire is painful, but not enough to make him talk. Now I will roll after another 5 minutes have passed, whilst the bandits hold the flaming torches ever closer to his bare feet. Rolling a second constitution check at -1. 8. This time the pain is too much for Elmander, and he begs for mercy. I'm going to roll a d4 to see how much damage he's taken from the burning to his feet. That's a 1. Lucan will now use the opportunity to question the stricken fighter. I have drawn up a list of questions that he may want the answer to. On a d6, he will want to know 1. The whereabouts of the mysterious figure known as the Lady. 2. What mission Elmander was carrying out for her. 3. Why she wanted the horse of the Border Guard's commander, Lord Flay. 4. How many cultists had infiltrated the Border Guards in Jankeen. 5. Why Elmander had first wanted to work with the cohort of Paha. And 6. Why he is now working against them. I'll make a roll to see what information Elmander gives out. Okay, let's see how this plays out. The pain overwhelmed his senses and became the only thing he could focus on. Even the sniggering of his tormentors faded into the background. The soles of his bare feet were burning, the heat so intense he could feel blisters forming on the skin. The flames had been licking down them for 5 minutes now, and his resolve was beginning to falter. Sweat dripped down his contorted face, and his mouth, having been fixed into a rictus grimace, now finally opened as he let out a cathartic scream. This caught the attention of Lucan, who had been gazing into the void for some minutes. As he turned towards the captive fighter, a cruel smile played across his lips, though the rest of his face remained expressionless.
I feel you are coming round to my request,
he intoned.
I'm glad we're managing to persuade you.
Elmander, racked with agony, swore viciously, and then screamed loudly as the flaming torches were thrust further into his feet.
All right, I'll talk. Stop this, you bastards!
The two cultists looked up at Lucan, who nodded imperceptibly. They withdrew, leaving the man breathing heavily and emitting quiet whimpers of pain.
Very well. I'm happy you've seen sense. It is a shame you chose another path. Could have been most useful to me.
Elmander looked up furiously, ready to spit in the necromancer's face, but Lucan held up a hand, and again the fighter's face froze.
No,
said Lucan.
You will tell me what I wish to know, and perhaps I will then let you die painlessly.
Elmander glared back, but bowed his head.
Good. Now, tell me, where is the lady? I know you have met with her.
She's in Forland.
Elmander spoke haltingly through gritted teeth.
She is playing the role of an ostler at a livery stable, calling herself Valera.
Lucan laughed like the sound of a coffin lid creaking open.
Most amusing. She always had a strange sense of humor.
He walked up to Elmander's prone body and ran a thin, bony hand over the man's damp, sweaty hair. With his other hand, he drew a black-handled surgical knife from the folds of his cloak.
Now, is there anything else you can tell me? The more I learn from you, the less your death will hurt.
There was a sharp knock at the door behind them, and a breathless Captain Bargard rushed in. Lucan turned, a look of irritation on his skull-like face.
What is it, Bargeld? Why do you disturb me?
My master.
He gasped.
We have a problem.
Behind the scenes. Whilst Elmander is being tortured, the others have been left under guard in the cell outside Lucan's chambers. They are still unarmed, although they still have the rest of their equipment. Evidently, belonging to a death cult does not do wonders for the bandit's sense of caution. I am now thinking as a player, what would the PCs do in this situation? The obvious answer is to create a distraction or disturbance to attract one of the guards and somehow take advantage of him. In order to work out what this is, I need to establish how this could be achieved. Firstly, how many cultists are guarding them? I'll roll a d6. 1 to 2 is 1 guard. 3 to 4 is 2. 5 to 6 is 3. I've rolled a 4. That's 2 guards. Okay, how long have the party been held in the cell? I'll roll another d6 for the number of hours. If it's 4 or more, I'll rule that they've been able to have a sleep, albeit an uneasy and fractured one, and thus can regain any used spells and prayers. Another 4. Okay, both Mara and Na'vi can use their special powers. Now, the party's in a cell, but is there anything in there that might aid them? Let's check on the Mythic GM emulator. I'm going to say it's very unlikely, i.e. a 25% or less chance on a D100. Let's see. 29, so close. So the cell is empty, other than the party members. Okay, it seems like the party will have to focus on tricking the guards. I'm going to select the character with the highest charisma. In this case, both Killia and Macus have a charisma of 12, so I'm going to put them forward for the attempt at deception. As there are two of them, I will give them a +1 bonus to the roll, which will need to be a 16 or more with Killia's level 3. It's a long shot, but this might just work. Here goes. 17! With the bonus, that's 18. Their deception has worked. Now, let's play through this. Day 7, afternoon. Party status. Killia, 7 of 10 hit points. Elmander, 12 of 14 hit points. Na'vi, 8 of 12 hit points. Mara, 8 of 8 hit points. Macus, 8 of 8 hit points. Spells available: Shield, Detect Magic, and Read Magic. Na'vi has prayed for Cure Light Wounds.
Help us! Help us! He's sick! Really sick!
Killia's voice rang out in the darkness, full of panic, and mixing with Macus's urgent groans. A shadow darkened the small hatch in the cell door.
What's this noise?
A suspicious voice demanded.
My friend,
sobbed Killia.
He's really bad. I don't know what he's suffering from, but I don't think he's got long.
The door opened, and the two guards, both short, squat men, one bald with a bristly beard, the other with lank hair scraped back in a greasy ponytail, walked in slowly, weapons drawn. They looked down at Macus, his face white and bathed in sweat. Their reaction wasn't quite what the party expected. They grinned in malicious glee.
Looks like we're gonna have a fresh one.
The bald one whooped.
Master can experiment on him straight after his death. What a beautiful offering to Parha.
We must tell him quickly, said the other.
who did not notice the furious dwarf emerging from the shadows.
Entering combat.
This will be a difficult fight for the party, as they are unarmed against two cultists each bearing a short sword. However, due to the success of Killia and Macus's plan, I will award the party a round of surprise. I'll rule that the party are aiming to subdue the cultists rather than to kill them, as this feels more realistic with no weaponry. The cultists, however, have no such qualms. They both wear leather armour for an AC of 13 and are armed with short swords. After rolling initiative order, Macus goes first. 15! He kicks out at the bald man's standing leg and sends him crashing to the ground. The cultist knocks his head on the cell wall for 2 points of damage. Mara is next. She charges the long-haired cultist. 14! Despite her slight build, she catches him off balance and he falls into the wall, twisting his ankle for 1 point of damage. Narvi is next. He aims a brutal punch at the long-haired cultist, carefully avoiding Mara. Nat 20! The punch catches the already unbalanced man square in the jaw with a sickening crunch, and Longhair crumples to the floor in an untidy heap. Well, that could not have gone much better for the party. Will the remaining cultists turn the tide in the first round proper? Round 1. Rolling initiative. Killia goes first. Seeing the bald man prone, she tries to push his head down onto the floor, but with a 3, the man is still too strong for her. Mara is next. 15! Wow, she has definitely spent too much time with Almanda. She kicks the man in the ribs for 1 damage. Narvi is next. Could the combat be over before the enemy even have a chance to retaliate? 19! For 3 damage! Narvi punches the bald man in the back of the head, sending his limp body to the ground. Incredibly, the combat is over. The four of them hurried quickly out of the open cell, after a fight that had taken merely seconds. Killia and Macus had taken the bandit's short swords after Narvi had refused the blade due to the creeds of his religion. They came to a junction. One way led back to the Dwarven Chapel, the other to the throne room where Lucan and his cronies had separated them from Almanda some hours before.
We need to rescue him before it's too late, said Mara.
Yes, but what of the prisoners?
Objected Narvi.
They are the reason we are here in the first place.
I agree, said Macus. Remember, Hollow Hill is a fighting village, and there are a good few fighting men holed up there. I saw Purdo and Gaffrey, and even old Josper can still swing a blade. I'll wager a couple of weeks in the dungeon won't have dimmed their fighting prowess, and they'll be just as keen as I am to avenge Longo.
He fell silent. Mara's face still radiated concern for Almanda, but she saw sense in their arguments.
Yes, we'll need all the help we can get against those evil men, she said. Not to mention the goblins, wherever those hideous creatures have gone now.
Agreed, said Killia. I'll stealth back, see if I can pick the lock and let the villagers out. The vulnerable ones can stay inside if need be, but we need some help.
Behind the scenes. Killia is going to return to the chapel to free the prisoners. It's risky, as though the bandits have moved on, this was the last time the band of goblins was sighted. I'll check in with Mythic to see whether they are still nearby. I'll call it a 50-50 chance. 0-5. That means they are certainly not there. Maybe Druk, licking his wounds and nursing his pride, has led them away to another part of the fort. Or perhaps they have decided to break their covenant with Lucan. In any case, Killia is still going to try moving quietly on her way back to the cell. She has a 35% chance. 0-2, that's a resounding success. The dice are certainly favouring the party today. She creeps back to the cell and rouses the prisoners, putting her fingers to her lips. Will she be able to open the lock successfully? Again, this is a 35% chance.
16!
The good luck continues. Using all of her gained experience, she unlocks the cell door quickly and efficiently. There are 11 prisoners in total. How many prisoners of fighting age and in good health will join her? I'll roll a d8. 4. Not the best roll, but these will be welcome reinforcements nonetheless. Now, are there any weapons remaining in the room after the brawl between the goblins and the cultists? I've drawn up a quick table of weaponry for each new NPC on a d6. 1 equals nothing, 2 to 3 equals daggers, 4 to 5 equals short swords, and 6 is axes or clubs. After a quick search amongst the detritus of the goblin battle, they find 2 daggers and 2 short swords, as well as a goblin club that Narvi might be able to commandeer if he can bear to touch it. Killia leads the ragtag band of malnourished fighters back down the corridor to the party. The final act of Caramond is ready to begin. Thank you for listening to Stories from the First Watch. I'd like to thank my voice actors, Nuala Motel-Casey and Robert Wade, who reprised the roles of Lucan and Captain Bargeld, respectively. I'd also like to thank Seth Baker, who voiced one of the party's unfortunate guards. The party have finally received some good luck amongst all the horrors they have suffered. Will they manage to rescue Armanda and drive the evil from this place? Or will Lucan and his minions end their adventure once and for all? Find out next time on Stories from the First Watch.